I want to start today's episode on a personal note. As I've mentioned on this podcast before, my dad's a dentist and he owned his own practice in South Africa for over 30 years. He eventually had to sell that practice due to business constraints and also just feeling like he's working harder and earning less. A big reason for this was insurance companies. And I can't help but wonder that if my father had met my next guest all those years ago, whether things could be different. Welcome to Bite Size Dental Marketing. My name is Ian, and today we're joined by the one and only Sandy Hudson from Unlock the PPO. Sandy has helped hundreds of dentists navigate the world of dental insurance and how to actually get the deals that make sense for your practice or drop the insurances that are no longer benefiting your bottom line. So if it feels like insurance companies are driving your practice, it seems like you're working harder and harder, but the money's just not coming in and you don't know what the first step is to drop those bad insurances, well then this episode is for you. Enjoy. Today we're joined by what I would call one of the unsung heroes, Sandy Hudson from Unlock the PPO. And you're out here fighting the good fight, Sandy. I was talking to you just before we started of there's so many dentists that feel and can relate to the message that you have and what you're doing to help dentists kind of get back to feeling fulfilled in dentistry. And even though they work harder to make that money and to feel that patient care is coming first instead of this battle of insurance companies and feeling that they're not getting anywhere. I would love to know your story of how you got into this and what motivated you to get into this business.
Yeah, it's, you know, a situation that is what most dentists are probably feeling like now. I'm married to a dentist, which is how I got into all this in the first place. So we had, my husband had been in practice for several years, had bought a practice, and the building that we were in went, all of the condos went on the market. So we were able to move to a larger office. And so got moved, we got crazy busy, had all this growth. And then at the end of the year, kind of realized we didn't actually really make much more money. We were a lot busier, but we weren't necessarily a lot more profitable. And so practice grew. But as anybody who's a dentist, you know, knows, dentistry is a hard business on your body physically. So that piece is not sustainable for most dentists, you know, in the course of 20, 30 years. So I started really looking at the numbers going, okay, we've got the patients, we've got all of the numbers, but what do we need to do differently to make this sustainable and more profitable? And so we started really hammering away at the insurance side of things of just evaluating things of, okay, what's working, what isn't. And, you know, realizing that by being busy and booking out far, we were accommodating for fee schedules that just weren't even profitable. And so they were clogging things up. And so we just really had to start evaluating and figuring out what makes sense and what doesn't. I originally got started because there weren't really companies doing that. And so I just started posting helpful information just to say, okay, I feel like I made every mistake in the book while I was trying to figure this out on my own. How do I save some other offices, you know, some of the hassles and mistakes that I made so that they don't have to reinvent the wheel? Like, I'm thinking, I wish there was somebody who could help me do this, you know? And so I just started kind of going, well, let's see. Maybe that is a thing that is a service that needs to be provided. And that's kind of how I originally got into this. And so it's just, you know, learning how much the industry has changed. That was 15 years ago. And, you know, now it's crazy complicated. Back then, it wasn't even nearly as complicated as it is now. So anyway, that's sort of my story of how I landed in this. Didn't really ever expect to be so in depth with dental insurance, but that's what it translated into. So it's been a fun journey.
I want to start us off with an interesting question or something that I personally am seeing or have heard from other dentists, and I want to know if you agree. Are bad insurance contracts hurting the heart of what the dental industry is meant to be, and it's making dentists feel unfulfilled in the work? I know that
dental insurance is needed. Insurance companies do play a role, but slowly but surely, I've been in the space for 5 years now, I've seen a trend of more and more frustration building up. What are you seeing?
Yeah, it's no doubt becoming more challenging. When we look at dental contracting now compared to, 10 years ago or longer, so many more shared network agreements. So what used to be a little bit more simplified process of at least the kind of contract, you knew what you were getting. Now, most insurance companies have shared network agreements with multiple other companies, meaning you can be in network with one company through somebody else's contract. And so if you understand that, that might be fine. But it's gotten to a point where dentists are it's become very confusing. So dentists just don't always understand what they're getting when they sign a contract, which has pulled them in network maybe with companies they didn't intend to be in network with. And so that part has certainly gotten more complicated, something that you really have to pay attention to. Also, there's just a crunch in the industry, where we're seeing so much more of, certainly with new dentists, their student loan debt is just so much higher now than it used to be, 20, 30 years ago. So you can pile that with so many, dental support staff leaving the industry during COVID. So now you've got this, higher overhead that's come since then, combined with higher student loan debt. Now you've got this situation where kind of the only place to pull that from is the dentist salary. Insurance companies are not keeping pace with that overhead. It's definitely squeezing the solo practice dentist. And that's who we're advocates of. We don't work with large DSOs. We're very much people who just work with the solo practice business model. So that's certainly what we're seeing across the country right now is a challenge.
Was COVID a big turning point for you?
COVID was, in that it's interesting, when everything happened initially with COVID, we really reined everything in with our company thinking, dentists are being shut down. They can't even practice right now. We expected to have no business at all. And it was the opposite. It was almost like dentists were on this forced vacation time shutdown. Vacation's probably the wrong word for it, but they were forced to shut down in a way that has never happened before, And so instead, it was almost like they had time to start reviewing their data. And since they couldn't, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to dive into some of these projects that I never have a chance to do normally. And so we were completely overwhelmed. We stopped taking new clients for several months during and after COVID for a while, because we just couldn't accommodate all of the phone calls. So it was exactly the opposite of what we were expecting. But hats off to dentists for really taking that time and saying, okay, we know changes are coming. How do we actually start looking at our business differently and start to make changes to respond to that? So I think overall it was helpful. It was just not exactly what we were expecting.
And that's so interesting that you said that, because it's time for some introspective exercises to figure out what are these things I've been trying to get at. And then you start seeing, holy moly, there's all of these things that I could be doing that will actually make my practice more money or make things better. And so it does make perfect sense. And part of that's actually a perfect segue into what I wanted to ask you next is, dentists are typically in the hustle and bustle. I mean, they wear so many hats in a practice. We can't expect dentists to keep up with these things, because it's, I'm the business owner, I'm the dentist, I'm the HR, it's a full-time jobs. I don't want to say job. But often there's things that dentists are just not aware of, or there's just misconceptions. And I want to ask you, what are some of those misconceptions about insurance contracts or how we deal with insurance that you can share with dentists so that they can at least just start to ask the right questions? In one of the previous episodes I listened of yours, you mentioned about how some contracts dentists just opt into things without being even knowing about it, but then they have to formally opt out, or otherwise it just continues. Are there some other examples of that you can share with dentists they can keep an eye on?
Like, a couple things would be, they should be paying attention to the initial terms of a contract. So meaning how long do you have to stay in network? So all contracts will have, it's usually 30, 60 or 90 days that you can terminate a contract. So, you know, you give notice to the insurance company if you don't want to participate anymore. And they'll, you know, tell you in the contract the amount of, you know, lead time you have to give them to get back out. But there are cases where there's an initial term of a contract that might be a year, 1 or 2 years, which means once you agree to a contract, you might not be able to terminate it for a year or two. And then you have to give notice after that. So just, you know, be reading through that verbiage pretty carefully to make sure that if you're thinking, well, maybe I'll, or like with a renegotiation, maybe you think, well, I'm going to go ahead and take this increase for now. I might want to terminate this contract at the end of the year, but for now, I'll just go ahead and take it until I can reevaluate further. If there's language in that contract that says you have to remain contracted for 2 years before you can terminate it, if you accept an increase, you want to really be aware of that because you might be locked in a little bit longer than you're thinking. So definitely, you know, reading through all of that. Also, non-covered services is the thing to pay attention to. So there's, I don't know, probably over half the states now have passed non-covered services laws, which really just mean if it's a completely non-covered service under the patient's policy, you're not bound by the PPO fee in most cases. You could charge the patient in cash. There's exceptions to that. You know, federal plans don't fall under that. There's every state writes their laws a little bit differently. But overall, the point is if the insurance company is not going to be paying for anything, they can't tell you what you can charge. There is paperwork sometimes, though, where the insurance company may ask you, let's say you're in a state that's passed that law. The insurance company may say, hey, even though you're not bound by the PPO fee, would you like to just voluntarily agree to abide by the PPO fee in cases where you don't have to? You should always, always, always check the no box if you're asked that question. If somebody's saying, hey, we do veneers and it's completely non-covered under the patient's policy and we can charge our cash fee, do we want to just agree to give the patient the PPO fee anyway? No. I mean, you can certainly consider if you might want to do that on your own, I guess, maybe, but you don't want to ever, you know, agree to that with an insurance company. There's a reason why those non-covered service laws are passed, which is to say you have the right as a business owner be able to charge your full fee if the insurance company is not contributing to the cost of that service. Then you want to always retain that option. So keep an eye out for that in paperwork as well. That's another one that's kind of sneaking in there a little bit more often these days.
Is there a lack of transparency in general with these companies when it's things like setting rates or how they deny claims or the things that you've mentioned, how can dentists navigate or challenge these things if they thought they were getting a certain kind of deal, but then actually the fine print, because we all know that insurance companies are there to make money, like it's the fine print exists. So is there a way that they can challenge it effectively? Do you have a way where maybe they'll have a higher chance of being successful?
It's just a lot of time invested, you know, to say, I mean, obviously, if you don't get where you're trying to get directly with the insurance company and you feel like you've exhausted all the avenues, you know, certainly you can file a formal complaint with the insurance commissioner and for your state and just try to get it escalated that way. And then just be very clear and careful of reading the language to say, did you unfortunately agree to something that maybe unfair, but you agreed to it, then there's not a lot of room to move with it. So just, I think back to your original point, be very careful about what you agree to. And also insurance contracts are typically not going to be normally the only thing negotiable is going to be the fee themselves. So when you're working with an insurance company, if you think you've lined through verbiage that you don't like on a contract and that's going to protect you, typically that's not the case. Typically, verbiage with an insurance company is not going to be something that you can edit out or change. It's really going to be make it or leave it. And then you need to be definitely deciding, are there clauses in this that are just not workable? Maybe I just better pass it.
On this, what you said of take it or leave it, if I took it and at some point I now realize This is not working. We know that there's so many dental practices that have certain PPOs that they realize it's not profitable for them anymore. And they're still hesitating to drop these because they're scared they're actually going to lose patients. You had, as I mentioned to you earlier, you had on the ACT Dental podcast that I listened of yours, you emphasized that this is something you chip away at. It's not just I'm insurance and now I swoosh over to fee-for-service. How can dentists start to evaluate which of these is no longer a good fit for me and I need to start chipping away at it?
So what we do, like with our clients, and it's certainly something dentists can, you know, really be looking at internally on their own as well, is we typically get it down to about 30 top codes for the practice. And say, let's, you know, you don't need to be looking at hundreds of 88. It's going to be 30 codes or less for a general practice, specialist even less than that. And then really look to see the makeup of your practice and then evaluate all of your current PPO contracts. So you want to get an estimated collections rate for everything that you've got in place now, because that's really your starting point. You need to know truly on paper, not just what is your staff paying, who do you think's paying you badly, but actually get it down on paper so you're really crunchy. And then we just put everything in order of best to worst. So we want to say, you know, who's paying you well, who's not paying you so well. We start down there at the bottom. Now, let's say your very worst paying fee schedule, you've got, you know, $300,000 a year of production tied to it. And your second lowest one, you've got $30,000 of production. Well, maybe you want to start with that little bit smaller one and you want to go ahead and eliminate that one first and then give your staff a chance to go through that transition, get used to talking with patients, and then you kind of work your way up to some bigger ones. So what, just want to get a good game plan and looking at who's really paying you at a rate that is not sustainable. And also, I think it's hard, you know, you kind of mentioned we don't want to lose all of our patients, of course. But I think when you're especially a solo practice dentist, you've spent years building relationships with patients. And it matters to you if patients stay or go. So there is this sense of, hey, we worked so hard to build our patient base, we don't want to lose anyone. But the reality is that, you know, if you drop a plan and you lose a few patients, number one, there's a good chance they're probably going to come back later if they are jumping ship just for insurance and don't have a good experience somewhere else. Are they going to, you know, circle back around in a year anyway? And but also, is it just a case where, you know, if you meet, like, let's say you lose 10% of your patients with that insurance company, but you collect your full fee on the other 90% who stay, it actually is a better business model for you to start making some of those changes. So yes, we never ideally want to lose patients, but there is a point where you need to recognize shrinking things just a little bit can definitely make sense from a business perspective of being able to then take care of those 90% who stay at a higher level because you have the time, you have the ability, you're getting reimbursed at a rate that's workable by the kind of dental care you want to provide. So there's definitely a tipping point in there. And when you think about it, if you're writing off 50% of your fee, you know, you can lose half of your patients and still collect what you're collecting now. And not to say that that's the goal by any means, but when you really start to crunch the numbers, sometimes dentists, I think, are very surprised at how much it does make sense to start chipping away. So yes, we want to be looking at this to say, we're not just going to randomly pick a company. We're going to really get all of our ducks in a row first and evaluate where all of the current contracts are at, and then start getting a game plan into play. And for some offices, maybe they're on a 2 to 3 year fight. You know, let's drop one plan every 6 months for the next 3 years and go very gradually. And then others are going more aggressively. But you can start to move in this direction without it being huge, major changes that are going to upset your whole practice. You know, just starting to go little by little and is definitely the direction a lot of practice
want.
As you explained that, I almost sort of like, it's like a toxic relationship. It's like you're like, if I leave, then I will be alone and I won't have any, but you actually know that you're going to be better off. And I mean, as you said, why would you stay if you know that you're writing all of that money off anyway? Rather work less initially and then build that up again, but still make the same amount of money instead of trying to do what you're doing now. You mentioned, Sandy, that negotiating all those contracts, it is a difficult thing. Is there some room? If I'm a dentist now and I'm saying to you, Sandy, I can't drop these insurance companies now. Like, I'm bleeding on this side. I can't find another staff here. I'm doing this. The money's looking thin. Like, I can't just drop this now. How can I renegotiate? What is that path to renegotiate now if I just absolutely can't start chipping away at these PPOs?
Well, it definitely never hurts to try that. And so, and that's part of what we do, you know, in our process as well, because we always want to see, let's get everybody's best offers on the table before you start dropping plans anyway. Because if you're thinking, well, I'm going to drop this one because it's lowest, well, let's make sure they're not willing to negotiate first before you make any changes. Maybe they go from being your worst payer to more tolerable if they are willing to do a negotiation. So yes, it's definitely always worth going to the insurance company and seeing what their offer is before you make final decision. So it is just a time intensive process. It really is just reaching out. It may take a few days to get assigned to a rep. It could take a month or longer, just depending on how backed up they are. So your staff just has to be very persistent and continuing to follow up and making sure that you actually get, you know, a final offer with some back and forth. And definitely don't take the first offer. You know, keep going back on your top codes. Your top 10 codes are going to be by far the most relevant one. So really focus in on that. So don't just go in asking necessarily for better fees on the entire fee schedule. Have the data for your practice really at your fingertips so that you know which codes are going to be the most relevant.
I want to play devil's advocate here too. We know the games that the insurance companies are playing on their side. What are the mistakes that dental offices are making though, where they're actually missing out, where they're like these insurance companies, but then Sandy and her team comes in and goes, well, doc, you're actually making these mistakes and you could be making a lot more money.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the biggest one, and I don't even know if I would say it's a mistake, it's just a reflection of how much the industry has changed. A lot of it is the downgrade. Meaning, you know, if you have, you know, multiple shared network agreements, and a particular insurance company maybe 3 years ago was paying on one of your better fee schedules, but since then, they've entered into shared network agreements with a couple of other companies that you have contracts with. And then they're all of a sudden just gradually downgrading over time. And it's really tough to catch those because nobody's sending you a notice that says, hey, by the way, I know we were paying you $1,100 for a crown, but now, you know, there's another contract you have that's paying $750 for crowns. We're just going to start using that piece. You know, there's no notice that's being given. You might get a shared network agreement notice, meaning you might get some kind of notice that says, hey, great news, we're entering into a new shared network agreement with XYZ. But you have to think beyond that and say, well, what does that actually mean for me? Does that help me or does that hurt me? And the insurance companies, when they do a notification, they all used to explain how you could opt out of that agreement. And sometimes they still do, but sometimes the announcement just says, here's what's happening. But they don't specifically tell you how to opt out of it. And almost all of those are going to have an opt-out option, meaning you can choose not to participate with it. You're going to automatically get opted in. You have to be the one to opt out. So if you get that notice and you're not sure if you want to participate and you want to opt out of that, you're probably going to have to reach out and specifically ask. We do post this on our website, but mostly on our Facebook page. Anytime we get one of these shared network agreements, just to say, what does this mean and what do you need to do with this for your situation? Just because it's very confusing. So it's not, like I said, it's not that necessarily dentists are making mistakes, but what is happening is if you're not spot checking EOBs to say, wait a minute, we used to be getting paid way better than this. What's happened? Because you really have to catch it on an EOB and remember how you were getting paid before versus how you're getting paid now in order to figure out how to rearrange some of that contract. So it's very tough. I always tell dentists, you know, this is all that we do. And we have a hard time keeping track of all of these. If you're working in a dental practice and you're actually seeing patients, trying to check benefits, collect payments, all the things that busy front office people are doing, it's very hard to catch them. So it's not meant to be a criticism of offices who are feeling like things have gotten very messy. We hear that all the time, where offices tell us, I don't even know what I have anymore. I signed contracts 10 years ago. I don't even know what's coming in where. It's gotten so messy that I just need to do an overhaul and revisit everything from the ground up. And every, you know, couple of years, you really do need to be doing that. It's just changed so much that it's easy to just get caught up in these downgrades and not realize it.
You were talking about change now. Are there more trends that you've been seeing as time is going on? This, as you said, this industry is changing so fast. AI came to mind for me. I do want to ask you about that in a second, if that has a role in the work you're doing. But what trends are you seeing with this change that you're talking about that's impacting PPO negotiations and these contracts and that dentists should understand?
So one big one that has really changed more recently is insurance. As we all know, everything's supposed to be confidential, right? So dentists are not supposed to share fee schedules with any other offices. We're very cautious about that. We don't ever read fee schedules from another office other than where it was intended. There's very strict rules about that. The same thing on the insurance company side. They're not to exchange fee schedules with other insurance companies. Okay, well, what's happening, though, is that's getting a little bit fuzzier, meaning insurance companies are definitely buying data in an anonymous format that says, you know, they can look at your office and see what's the average PPO fee that you're accepting. So how that's playing into negotiations is if an insurance company has a request from your office for a higher fee schedule and they look at your office data and they can see your average fee that you're collecting is less than what this insurance company is paying you, we're seeing a lot more denials at times where an insurance company just says, we're already above what you're willing to accept from other insurance. Now, I do not like that at all. I don't think that that should be a possibility for any insurance company to see any fee that any office is agreeing to regardless. Just like any of us, like, you know, to have our, you know, have somebody say, well, here's what you're making. And, you know, we're just not going to give you a raise this year because, you know, we think you're already getting paid enough. And that's, that does not set well with me at all. However, what dentists need to then be thinking about is if you're willing to take lower fees than are workable for you, that's going to potentially have an impact the farther down the road we go with this. The more data that insurance companies can see about what you're agreeing to with other insurance companies. Now, it's not going to be labeled. It's not going to say the specific name of the insurance company and their fees. They are able to see what you are willing to accept from selectively from other insurance companies. So you want to be thinking about that impact that that can have on you, because if you're saying your fees aren't workable for me, I need a higher node, you really do need to be chipping away at some of those bottom ones so that you are moving up as far as what you're agreeing to accept from all collectively all of the insurance company contracts that you've got, because that really can now start to hurt you. The other thing is be paying attention to where your cash fees are at. Some insurance companies don't care about your cash fees. They don't look at them, or they're not using them as much. Some insurance companies will want to see your cash fees before they negotiate. So you might be thinking that you're doing your patients a favor by keeping your cash fees on the lower side. And in some ways, probably are. But the way that that can work against you is insurance companies want to see what the write-offs are. And bigger write-offs mean they're delivering a, you know, kind of bigger value to the patient. So if your cash fee is, you know, $1,000 for a crown, but the average crown fee is really in your area is more like, let's say, $1,400, well, then their $900 crown offer is actually very good. So they're going to use that to justify, you know, the write-offs are very minimal for you. So this is a good deal. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily a good deal. It means your cash fees may be low. So you never want to artificially inflate your cash. I'm not saying play game with, you know, creating cash fees that aren't actually what you're charging. You want them to be real fees, but you do want to be paying attention to your cash fee as far as where they fall for your area. And the other always reminder that I give, always fill out your cash fees on the claim forms. Don't fill out the PPO fee, because if an insurance company is seeing your PPO fees on what you're billing out, in their world, they're paying 100% of your fee, because the only fee that they know for your office is what you're putting on the claim. So do not fill out PPO fees. Fill out your cash fees so that you can monitor the write-offs. That's the other thing. How can you monitor write-offs if you're not billing out your cash fees and comparing your cash fees to the PPO fee in terms of write-off? So you really want to be billing out cash. That can make a difference on the fees that you're able to negotiate. And that's actually what the insurance companies want you to do. That insurance companies will all tell you, fill out your cash so that they're authentic on your...
As you're saying these things again, I go back to... This is so much admin for someone that's already trying to, yeah, to run a dental practice or things to even know. I mentioned AI a second ago. I mean, I know for the work that I'm doing, it's been a fantastic companion in just helping speed up some of the tasks. Have you played around a bit with AI or seen anything in the industry?
We're just starting to, just in our own company. It's kind of very exciting, all wrapped up into one little bundle, you know, but it is being very helpful in a lot of ways. You know, I think probably a little bit more of the scary side for dentistry is, are these claims being reviewed by actual dentists? Are they things that are being, you know, automated in a way that may be good and may not be good? So I am interested to see where this goes. Yeah, I think we're just on the very initial frontier of where that's all going.
Because I do worry, Sandy, we get at a point of, we take, insurance companies take the human side out of these claims and these things, and it's just some AI bot going like, this number was wrong on this thing here, or like, this isn't covered, and then it's like, no. And then someone that actually did qualify for the care is now just being denied because it's this robotic kind of conveyor belt system that's just pushing people out.
And that's a concern. There are, you know, and I won't mention specific names, but, you know, there are some companies where you cannot get a live person anymore when you call in. And, you know, it's so frustrating because, just what you said, there's cases where, like, there's a real person that just needs to jump in and help resolve something. And so, you know, moving even more away from that is not helpful for this industry.
You've already provided so many helpful things today for dentists and tips. If I'm a dentist and I'm looking to reduce my reliance on insurance companies and transition towards more of a fee-for-service type of practice, what are some of the initial things? And keep in mind, again, I'm this dentist that I'm scared, because I think many dentists feel this way. I'm scared that I'm going to lose my patient base. I've heard that it doesn't impact me that much, but what if it does? What I don't know, and I need to pay my staff. What are some of those initial steps that you can encourage dentists, like, you've got this, this is where you can start?
I think what you all do is a really key piece to it. It is, you know, and I know that your client base has a lot of overlap with us in terms of business models, meaning looking at how do we position a solo dental practice business model or small group business model to be competitive. And so a big part of that is the marketing side of what, you know, you all are the experts at that piece of it. So all a lot of times tell offices too, if you're going to go dropping plans, remember, the only thing the insurance company is really giving you in exchange for your PPO participation is a listing on their website. You know, that's what you're getting. That's the marketing value that they're giving you in exchange for participation. So if you know your plan is to start going out of network with more proactively, then build the marketing side of your practice differently so that, you know, you're not waiting necessarily to drop something big. You are already proactively building your new patient flow coming from some other place. I particularly talk about this if it's a fee-for-service office who is slowed down maybe and they're thinking about adding some PPOs. And sometimes that is the right fit. But also make sure, have you also piggybacked that with marketing in other ways. I mean, PPO write-offs are just marketing dollars. It's just figuring out what's their place in your practice. So I think the marketing side, you know, what you all do is how do we not just look at our marketing as far as people who find us on the insurance company website? How do we build our name and brand differently and let people know about it? The other part I think is important is, and there's a lot of conversation happening about this in the dental world, is, you know, the traditional dental business model has been hygiene oriented. It's been people come in through a routine cleaning and checkup, they get their cleanings twice a year, and then as they come through, you know, dentistry is being diagnosed on them for the doctor side of things. The thing that is so difficult right now is the hygiene shortage. So what happened, as I'm sure everyone knows, during COVID, so many hygienists left the industry permanently. And we don't, we are over flooded with new dental schools opening. We don't need more dental schools, but we need more hygienists. So there's a true lack of hygienists. I talk to dentists every day across the country, and there's just not enough hygienists. So, you know, we don't have that same growth coming in by replacing hygienists last year COVID. So now we're in a situation where, you know, hygiene salaries have gone up substantially. And that's if you can find a hygienist. It is very common now for a practice to go without a hygienist for 6 months, just trying to find a replacement or relying on temps until they can get be permanent. So that traditional hygiene business model has become really challenging. I mean, so thinking outside that box more and saying, am I going to continue to follow that? Or do I need to be doing marketing to get patients in the door who are looking for something beyond just a cleaning and checkup? You know, how do we kind of enhance the way patients find us beyond just that? And, you know, again, not all your expertise, not mine, as far as how to do that. But it, what's happening is because, you know, insurance rates are not going up at the same pace as overhead is going up, we've got to crunch that way. And then we've got this hygiene piece where even if you can find a hygienist, you might be paying $10 or $20 an hour more and for a hygienist than you were a few years ago. So the only place to support that is coming from the dentist salary. There just isn't another way to offset that. So definitely looking at, do we want to continue with the same, you know, business model, or do we need to be a little bit more creative about how we look at it? So definitely some pieces that I think are going to be changing, because that hygiene piece is not a quick fix. You know, you've got to have a lot of time to rebuild a hygiene pool after what was lost during COVID. And that is, you know, probably many years down the road before we would see a change with that. So, you know, look at things a little differently than we have in the past.
Hmm. Sandy, I want to ask you, if dentists want to get a hold of you or take these next steps, because that is ultimately the first thing they need to do, is they need to get in contact with the right people, the right person to help them do these things. Because as we said, it is difficult. It is overwhelming to do these things. Are you doing workshops? Do you do consults? How can people contact you to make sure that they take these first steps?
Well, our website is unlockthepppo.com. And then if you go into that, we have an established side. That's going to be probably where the majority of people listening today would qualify, meaning you already own a practice. And then we also have a startup site if you're getting ready to do a scratch, you know, open your doors from the ground up. You have kind of two different pieces. If you click on the contact us page on our website, it'll ask some questions about who do you have contracts with now. We just give complimentary feedback to first to say, do we think we would be a good fit for your situation? And then we offer a complimentary consult as well, just to chat through, you know, we're pretty conservative about, we don't want people to move forward with us unless we really think that there's big changes that we can make for them. So we'll give some feedback on that. But yeah, our website is unlockthepppo.com. And then just for somebody who's maybe keeping this in-house or maybe just doesn't have a lot of changes to make but wants to stay up on like these shared network agreement changes, then I recommend, you know, find us on Facebook. We're just Unlock the PPO on Facebook. Well, we really do try to post a lot of educational things. There's also some educational videos on our website that just are open to anybody. So there are just three things that we provide just to try to keep people a little bit more educated in the industry. So that's an easy place to check out.
A last question came to mind, as you said, now on the startup side and on the established side. If you had a megaphone to dentists that are just coming out of a dental school, are you saying fight the good fight and go fee for service and try and get the patient that you want to get? Or are you saying there is a place for you to start out with these insurance companies, but then you need a strategy to wean it off over time?
Yeah. And I think the second one is pretty common as far as, you know, what's the rightful place of insurance, meaning what are fee schedules that are workable, and then setting the foundation well from the beginning. And so if you're doing a startup and you're evaluating, okay, do we need some participation? But if so, what's the right participation? Certainly, you know, we do the demographics to say, well, here's the insurance companies that are going to be relevant by employer group in your area. That's a big part of it. And then figuring out what's the best fit. If you're looking at opening up fee-for-service from the get-go, couple of pieces to that. One is going to be certainly demographics. It's, you know, if you're in Southern California, that's a pretty rough place to start there and kind of not have to work your way up to over time. If you're in an underserved area, that's certainly going to make that much, you know, much easier. And the other piece is to a little bit of the, like if a dentist is thinking they're going to open fee-for-service, a lot of times what they might want to do then is they might continue to work as an associate for a couple days a week somewhere else. And they go into it knowing, I really want a fee-for-service business model, but I'm just going to have slower growth with that. So how do I kind of blend my work to do that? You know, maybe opening and expecting a little bit slower pace with that. Or do we go with a little bit more insurance to be able to ramp up a little bit faster? And then, like you said, you know, give that a few years for growth and then maybe get that feeling back once you get, you know, where you're trying to get.
Sandy, thank you so much. I appreciate you and I admire the work that you do. I told you a bit about my story with my father and how I wish that you had met him 7 years ago and that you had shared with him everything that you do now. Keep up the good fight and it's amazing that you're able to help dentists get more out of what they do in dentistry. So thank you for the work that you do and I appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.